Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with the always ready Emily Burke.
That's true. I'm always prepared for anything.
Anything. And Mr. Joe Buscema or Buscema?
Buscema.
Buscema. So maybe I'm wrong. I'm butchering his name. This is off to a 6-star, bro.
Nice.
He's a nice guy, though, Joe. I've met him a few times. We had a vegan salad. Actually, oh my God, at Sweetgreen.
Sweetgreen is everything, guys.
Sweetgreen is everything and nothing, guys.
I really hope that everyone has a Sweetgreen in their area.
They don't.
So good.
You can look it up. It's only in cities such as Los Angeles and Philly, right?
Yeah, there's like 2 or 3 in Philly, so get on that, Philadelphia.
Philadelphia has good food and okay people.
I'll take it. You know what? I'll take it. Yeah.
Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Okay. But good food. So Joe is an artist manager and comes from the grueling getting on the road and fucking handling shit background. So support to that. And I just want to give a shout out because I know Set It Off is probably like the prodigal son band of Idobe because they are on Idobe all the time. But I was at Warped in New York, and Set It Off had one of the biggest crowds of the day, and it was like 12:45. So Joe manages Set It Off. Hey.
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 Hey, shout out to Set It Off. Shout out to Fearless Records.
Ooh.
Shout out to the Jones Beach Warped Tour because I had to bring Set It Off posters for Fearless Records.
Dakota was there.
Dakota was there.
Ivan was there, I think, in spurts, right?
Yeah, he came in and out.
Yeah, and who else? Who ran the booth at Fearless? It was
Brandon.
Brandon, he's awesome.
He's the best.
He's
everyone,
a nice guy.
If you went to the Fearless booth at Warped Tour this summer, I'm sure you saw Brandon. Hopefully, you said hi and were very nice to him because he was out on the entire tour. So
it's bonkers.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, with the wheel spinning. Anyway, yeah. back to Joe. So back to Waldman's Words, which is on every single.
Every single Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, and then reruns again on Sundays at 5 a.m. Pacific, 8 a.m. Eastern.
That was really good. You did that well.
I know. I've been practicing.
As I say, you do it well. On Idobe.com, you can stream every single episode. On iTunes, you could subscribe for free. What episode is this? Is this episode 97?
This would be 97, yeah.
Holy shirt.
Oh, my God.
So we have some special surprises planned for the next few weeks. Moo-la-la-ha-ha.
That was it, guys. That was actually it. That was the last surprise.
I've never seen such scorn from your mirror eyes.
Then you have not known me long enough.
I've known you for 2 years and change, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that is accurate. And this show's been on for almost exactly 2 years because it debuted in September of 2016, right after I got married.
Oh my God, it's almost the 2-year anniversary.
And it's perfect because it's almost the 100th show.
Oh my God.
This is just a nice day. Joe, wait, can you pronounce what you think the pronunciation of his last name is? Because then we'll ask him right away.
I'm going with Buscema.
I think you're right. I think it's Buscema. And I think he's a junior too. So he's named after another Joe Buscema. And he's Canadian. Nice guy. Just a really good guy. Like, and works really hard for his bands. Actually gives a shit. So I'm honored that Joe has taken the time to do this show. Stick around for Waldman's Words with Emily Joe and Scott's voice cracking. All right. We are here with Joe Buscema. And we learned when we recorded, I guess, the first minute of something that no one will ever hear, that's how you pronounce it. But, Emily, you were right, okay? You got his name right. Congratulations,
Thank you,
Emily.
I know. Get used to it. I'm right a lot.
You are right a lot, honestly. And you're definitely not alt-right. Anyway, Ooh. So, Joe.
Hopefully not.
No.
Definitely not.
Well, we discussed that she's a Latina Jew, so I that would be very confusing if you were alt-right.
Yeah.
My last name's Waldman. I'm clearly alt-right.
Yeah, definitely not.
No.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we like to get the real bullshit politics out of the way. So Joe is here. Joe's a nice guy. I had Sweetgreen with Joe once, and we went on a hike. Care to comment?
I sweat a lot on that hike.
You sweat-greened it.
Yeah, dude, I was sweating green. You know, since I'm a vegan, I just, like, sweat green. I bleed green, you know.
I love bleeding grass.
Yeah, dude. Just, you know, making sure everyone's got their greens.
I feel like a hike is the most LA, like, hey, let's meet up. Want to go for a hike or something?
No, it is. It's total LA, and I love it. I was wearing my Lululemon. I was basically complaining, you know, that James Cameron was late for a meeting. It was total LA.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was wearing my short shorts.
And I got to know Joe a lot better than I thought I would.
Yeah, you know, I gave him a little bit of dessert that day.
No, let me tell you something. It was super sweet. So Joe is here right now. Joe is actually from the Great White North, but I would love to hear about what got you into music, because I could think of so many incredible Canadian bands, but you might have been inspired by Russian bands for all I don't know.
Honestly, how I got into music was just like, I always grew up with my parents playing music, like just in the house and whatnot. My dad was really big into classic rock, and my mom was, you know, like a disco queen, pop princess, if you will. And
Carly Rae Jepsen.
Now would be the equivalent.
That's
I guess,
I think.
But like, my mom loved to play like ABBA in the house, you know.
Respect.
So just lots of that growing up, and you know, it's great. I love that vibe. But you know, I guess being named after my dad and being the son of my father, you know, at first...
Most men are the sons of their fathers.
That's so fucking bizarre, dude.
I've yet to meet a man who is not the son of his father. But, Emily, I challenge you over the course of this interview to Google and figure out at least one person who is not the son of his father.
Anyway...
Let's reclaim this.
Wow. This is too much. No, I'm kidding.
No, you're actually not. Wow. This is definitely too much.
Incredible. But yeah, so basically, you know, me wanting to look up to my dad, he would be like, nah, disco sucks. Like, you got to listen to classic rock. And then one day I came downstairs, he was blaring CCR. So some like real American rock and roll. And I, you know, heard that song.
Did you feel like a fortunate son to your father?
Definitely, while I was down on the corner as well, you know. That was actually the song. It was Down on the Corner. And I fell in love instantly with that band. He gave me their cassette, and I, like, studied it. I laughed. I cried. I was emotional. And, you know, it's like music made me feel something for the first time. And that's when I was just hooked. You know?
Well, John Fogerty has quite a few hits. The first time I was exposed to Creedence, have you heard of CCR? I'm just curious.
Mm-mm.
Oh, God, the youth. Well, your father 100% likes him, but basically...
Oh, for sure.
He's a quintessential, like, 60s, 70s musician. He was in a band called Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Oh, okay.
And then eventually Creedence Clearwater Revisited was sans him.
Yeah.
But I think of the movie Forrest Gump and the montage in Vietnam where they're playing... Fortunate Son, that's what I think of. But anyway, I digress. So what other classic rock, like, was it a big, like, Gloria Gaynor versus, like disco versus, like, Bee Gees versus, like, Jimi Hendrix in your household?
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, my mom was very much into, like, Bee Gees, ABBA, like, anything from the disco days. Whitney Houston, even though that's not really disco. Just, like, 80s was her thing, you know? Like, she was queen of the 80s, and my dad was... You know, very much about bands like AC/DC and, God, I don't even know, like...
Well, if it's like 80s rock, I mean, like Bon Jovi was... Okay, like Black Sabbath?
Yeah, my dad was into Sabbath, like anything that was like tough guy shit, you know, like 70s too.
Well, Bon Jovi is not tough guy shit, so that makes sense.
My dad hated the 80s.
Okay.
Hated the 80s. My mom loved the 80s. My dad was more like 70s rock, you know. Like,
did he like Boston?
He did like Boston. I love Boston, dude. So good.
I mean, that's one of the best debut albums of all time. So Definitely. Did you, when you were creating your own playlist, I mean, this is pre-Spotify, when you were creating your playlist of disco and balls to the wall rock and roll, what got you into your first band that you were really into?
Honestly,
like, was it separate from them, or was it just like, nah, fuck it, I love Creedence, my band?
It was definitely separate, because it's like, you know, you're at the young age where it's like, the world makes sense, and, you know, you love spending time with your parents, and you love being a good kid, and then you get to that age where the world doesn't really make sense anymore, and that's when I found punk rock, and, you know, the Ramones were as cliche as that sounds, like, first punk band I got into, I remember being like, Dad, I just want to break stuff. And he's like, oh, great. My son's a punk now. And, you know. Just
well, what's that accent, though? Like, because, like, that was an, like, because your parents, are they both from Canada?
They are, yeah.
Because that accent sounded like, hey, my son's a punk. What am I going to do? Like, well, like kind of like Queens. Well, I liked it.
Yeah, my parents are, like, super Southern Italian.
That's fucking sick. Yeah. That's New York. I'm from New York. So, and speaking of the punk rock and the Ramones, I think that Sex Pistols and Green Day were my, like, gateway drugs into this aggressive music that we love.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, neither are from New York, but...
Ramones are.
Yeah.
Well, Ramones. I don't. When I think of Canada, I don't think of the Ramones. I think of a band on your shirt called Bearings.
Oh.
Ooh. You see what I did there?
I see. But with bands like Green Day and stuff, would they be really considered aggressive nowadays?
I mean, to some. I mean, distorted guitar, like Frank Sinatra would call it a racket.
Okay, I'll take that.
I mean, it's just, I mean, not every, like, the germs would think that they're pussy rock, you know? It's like, no matter what, there's always someone who hates everything, and I hate them.
Oh, gosh.
This got really hard. So, anyway, so Canada... Punk rock, Ramones, I guess, did you start playing any instrument, or were you just, like, more of a fan?
While I was in my first house as a kid, like, with my parents, and, you know, they're raising me on this music, and it's a battle between disco and rock.
Which clearly disco won.
Yeah, clearly, obviously, disco won. I work with a lot of pop music now. But, I started making, like, little drum kits out of, like, my toys and, like, my mom's, like, pots and pans and whatnot.
You can't see my face right now, but that was the cutest thing I've ever heard. Like, literally, like, he was, like, you guys can't see him, but he was playing the instrument, and I was just, like, taken back.
That's to, also like, the, like, man. Italian in me to, like, use my hands to, like, you know, describe what's going on, but, yeah, you know, oh, come hey. On. But, yeah, so, you know, I started making, like, little drum kits. Like, my dad bought me, like, a pair of drum sticks, and, like, my family was struggling at the time, and then my dad started his own business, which started doing well at the age of 9. I got my first kit, but I got my first guitar a little before that, actually, and so I kind of started playing guitar and drums, like, at the same time as a kid, but drums always being my prominent instrument, I guess you can say.
Well, Emily has acting experience, and I've never played the drums.
I've never played the drums either. But did you go into, like, local bands and stuff, or did you just do it on your own?
You ever heard of Sum 41? That's Joe. Literally, all four of them. You ever heard of
Rush? That's me.
Yeah, everything.
Celine Dion. Neil Peart.
Yeah.
My heart will go on.
Your heart is going on XYZZ, XYZZX, and some moving pictures. Rush is amazing, but I want to learn about you. So let's screw Joe and screw Scott for a second. So, when you think of 70s rock and disco, what comes to mind for you?
Disco first is ABBA.
Okay.
Yeah,
always.
For sure.
Yeah. No, there's nothing else that really, like,
the Dancing Queen.
You
know?
Yeah. Yeah. 70s rock, I think Zeppelin.
Okay.
I think...
they would be considered to... I mean, they were definitely started late 60s, but they were, like, the first, like, arena rock band. Yeah. So it's like...
I think, like, Eric Clapton.
Okay. His solo stuff, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
And
dude shreds, bro.
Yeah,
dude could fucking shred.
Honestly, I'm just thinking of every single band that they've ever mentioned in that 70s show is, like, what I think of. In
Foghat. That 70s show is a sick show. So I guess when you had your one man band where you played guitar and drums and screamed at the top of your lungs,
yeah, like, it was great.
When did you start getting involved in the local scene?
So yeah, basically I got my first kit at the age of 9, started my first band at the age of 11, played my first show at the age of 13.
And every 2 years you do cool shit.
That kind of seems to be the vibe of my life.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, so basically after we played our first show with my first punk band, I was 13, and I played my first show and I just couldn't get enough. I wanted to be on the stage and I wanted to be at shows as much as possible and help bands as much as possible. It's like, this whole new world just exploded inside of me. And basically, I started working with promoters to, like, at the age of 13, to, like, get opening bands for Bill. So they would be like, hey, we have, like, these 2 bands. We're going to want, like, 4 other bands to play.
Give me
this
an
show.
Example of what bands. Like, were these touring acts or were they more local bands?
Sometimes they were, like, touring punk acts. And sometimes it was just, like, local legend shit. You know, like, bands that can... bring out 150 people, but we're talking about a 400 ticket room. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the promoter or like the venues that I would work with would be like, hey, we have the good band that's going to draw the most of the tickets. Now, if you can rile up like, you know, some really strong locals and get them to promote the show with us, then like, you know, we'll give you a cut of like the ticket sales or a cut of like the bar sales. Mm-hmm. And then
how old were you?
13.
Wow.
13 when I started that.
That's pretty cool. You got in young.
Yeah, totally. And then I started booking shows on my own when I was like 15, you know, like this venue.
Every
in
2 years.
When you're, right?
You know? Literally is. I'm discovering shit on the air.
Like, you would be surprised how well, like, that 2 year.
That thing. Formula.
Yeah. So, 15 venue in Toronto, legendary, rest in peace, the Big Bop. It was like the home for Toronto music, whether it's like touring acts on a mid-level scale or like up-and-coming bands in the Southern Ontario scene, you know. Basically that was like our, you know, our home. And they would be like, hey, we have a venue available on this day, we want you to just book the whole show. So I did some cool stuff there, and yeah, that's kind of how I got into like the local scene and whatnot.
Well, I'm just trying to think of the local scene for you because you're a little bit younger than me, but I guess Gob
was still, yeah, Gob. You probably know a band called Flashlight Brown.
I've heard the name. I don't know. I'm not too familiar with their music. I know about Pez, which Pez, became the Billy Talent band.
Yeah, dude.
One of the best, the literally top five band I've ever seen at Warped, without a shred of doubt.
They were one of the first bands I ever saw at my first Warped tour. They might have
06,
been
probably.
The 04.
Oh, wow, they played there. I played 06.
So in twos now, 06, my first punk band played Montreal Warped tour. Like,
get out of town with a bunch of Habs and Poutine.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of bummed that we couldn't play Toronto, you know. But we like to play Montreal, sorry.
You know what, as an artist manager, you should just be happy with what they have. Don't you hate it? Don't you hate it when they complain about shit that... Anyway, so 2006, I'm just trying to think of, what were you doing in 2006? Were you in, like, first grade?
No, I was in fourth grade.
God damn it. 2006, I was collecting AARP. And I was going to see Foghat's reunion show with my walker.
I was a sophomore in high school.
You guys both are lucky. So I guess, what was your gateway drug into? Because on the intro, I actually described that you're a road warrior. And you've been out and about. So I want to hear about like what got you there.
Like into touring and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't have a script. I'm just being Miley.
Yeah, cool. So,
is this going okay so far? I'm really nervous.
Oh, it's going great.
So nervous.
No, you're doing great.
Thank you. I as you can tell, I have a list of 100. Am I doing good? Honestly, so far, you are doing super.
Hell yeah, dude. So yeah.
Let's reclaim this.
Yeah, let's reclaim this conversation.
Let's set it off with like all my bearings about.
Right.
Where can you take it next? I'm honestly curious.
Yeah, I got like, you. Keep it going. I'm waiting for more.
I'm just getting some pure noise popping from my oculars, and I'm feeling fearless.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Oh, boy. Yeah, life is short. Dad jokes rule.
Shout out to Pure Noise Records and Fearless Records.
Shout outs to anyone listening to this show. But yeah, fuck yeah. Fearless Records. Let's Plain White Tees, Pierce the Veil, fucking Pure Noise. Story So Far Records going to be hot.
Yeah.
Hot.
I mean, I work with neither of those bands.
I know. I'm giving. I gave your band.
I am.
Not really, everything's about you.
I know. I just wanted to. You know,
I talked about bearings.
You did.
I did.
You
did. I did. And you know the whole Weekday Records thing. You could talk about that. We don't have a script, but it says be careful.
Okay. You asked something about touring.
Yes.
Okay. So basically.
Basically, I feel like I'm stoned. I'm not stoned. This is awesome.
Yeah, no, that's just because you're chilling with me. I'm like radiating, you know, the green, you know?
Yes,
yeah.
The green party.
We're going back to the green that pours out of me. But
some seitan is like emanating from my gullet. Back to you.
Yeah, so basically 2009 was the year. A couple years before that, here we go with our 2 years. So 2007... I discovered a band on MySpace called Abandon All Ships. And then that was the first band where I was like, maybe I can manage a band that's not my own band. And like that was a new and exciting thing for me. And, you know, it just blew my mind. And I'm like, yeah, I want to manage this band. And that's what I started to do. And obviously I was 17, so I didn't really know what the fuck I was doing. And they were starting to get a little bigger. And it was kind of just like a mutual thing, like, yo, I know you guys need to get some different management. Like, that's cool. I just want to be your friend still. And
but you were in high school, right? If you were 17, or you just graduated? I was in my
senior year, yeah. Wow. So, basically, yeah, I'm like, yo, I get it. I just want to remain friends. And that was super important to me. And then 2 years later in 2009, I was booking shows in my little suburb of Toronto. And basically, I had booked Abandon All Ships, and I was like, yo, you guys are going on tour, like, literally next month, which was August of 2009. And I was like, I know I'm not your manager, and you guys have new management now, but maybe I can be your tour manager. And I just want to get on the road, and I just want to be there with you guys. Like, it'll be so much fun. And I convinced them, and they were like, yeah, it's great. And I loved it. I feel like I definitely did a great job of that. And then,
can you explain what a tour manager does? Because, I mean, Emily and I both know, but we look at this show as if some kid in Ajax is listening and wants to be a tour manager, an artist manager, they can learn a lot from Joe Buscema Jr.
Yeah, so tour management is basically like handling all the business for the band on the road, taking care of the scheduling, you know, making sure that payment is handled properly, like, you know, when you settle up, make sure that the expenses match what's on the contract and that, you know, everything kind of lines up with the ticket sales and money that came in and money that came out and, you know, what is supposed to be paid to the artist first, paid to the promoter, you know, just how the deal's structured and just make sure that the artist is paid fairly and that the promoter isn't like, oh, yeah, I spent $1,000 on advertising, but you can't see a fucking single poster in this room. You know, and, like, they don't have receipts, then it's like, well, you're going to have a hard time backing up that $1,000 expense. So it's, like, stuff like that, stuff like making sure that the show stays on schedule.
Also, whether that with the bands, like, being the nag kind of a lot of the times to get, like, these kids out of bed.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally. So it's, like, you know, you don't want the show to run too late. So whether it be, like, the physical show itself and keeping it on time or – also just making sure that, like, the show goes on in terms of, like, the band gets from city to city. Sometimes you encounter shit along the way that, you know, tries to prevent you from getting from city to city.
I mean, you laugh, but all the time, I mean, if I had a dollar for every time I've seen a GoFundMe for a band that's gotten shit stolen, yeah. If I had a dollar for every time I've heard about, you know, bands breaking down or emotionally and physically.
I have a really bizarre story from the last tour I was on, and that was kind of like, once I came home, you know, it was like, trying to manage a lot on the road. And then while being on the road with a band I manage, like being tour manager and manager, it was, you know, I had to call it my last one, at least for now. But basically...
I get it. I don't want to tour manage. Yeah. I get it. I'm fucking married.
Yeah. I feel like I'm not married and I have like 30 kids or something.
And some other ones out of wedlock.
Yeah. And, you know, I absolutely love what I do. I love managing everyone that I do, and you know, I see everyone in the band as their own separate individual with their own career that I need to upkeep. So, you know, it's like not being on the road is what's beneficial most for everyone that I manage, you know.
Well, when you're on the road with one band, it's hard to have your attention on the other ones because it's a 24/7 job.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you're TMing, it's hard to definitely like upkeep everything else when things are happening around you. So I would often like just crawl to like the back of the van and like plug in my headphones and just take phone calls and fire off my emails and, you know, be in constant communication with everybody. So I definitely did my best to make sure no one felt like they weren't a priority.
But it's difficult.
It's definitely a challenge. And I didn't want it to get to, you know, a level where people started to feel that way. That's very, very important to me. So, basically, the funny story was one of the members of the band I was with, we were in an Uber, and he left.
Can you say which band it is?
Sure, it was Cherry Pools.
Okay.
And
shout out to Weekday. See, I know. Yeah.
So, Martin left his phone in the Uber on accident, like just complete accident, and the Uber driver that we had was kind of crazy. She was like, do you guys mind, like, keeping the music down? Like, the music was not loud at all.
So is that,
we're
like
able
a two?
To talk over it. Yeah. And, you know, she's like, you mind keeping the music down? Like, you know, I get super stressed out. And I'm like, well, you're an Uber driver.
Yeah, like, shouldn't. You're in the wrong profession.
Yeah, this is in Philadelphia, too. So we're in, like, a big city. Okay. And she's, like, freaking out while driving, I can tell, for no reason. Like, I know Martin has blue hair, but he's a nice guy, I promise, you know? So
fucking freak.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yo, chill the fuck out. Martin's a good guy. So, you know, she's like freaking out. She runs a red light. We almost get T-boned. If it wasn't for me being like, red light, we're about to get T-boned, like, probably would have died.
That's scary, dude.
So we get to this falafel spot that we were going to. Phenomenal. I wish I knew the name. And then, you know, the band had just played in Philly. It was an awesome time. We get to the falafel spot. We're eating food. We're about to leave. Martin's like, I lost my phone. Try calling it. Uber driver picks up and she's like, you have to go through the app. I'm turning off this phone. And she like turns off his phone. And obviously, you know, it's
she
like,
has his phone.
She has his phone. And it's like kind of a big deal for me to know that like Martin can get his phone back. So we had to sleep overnight in the Uber parking lot. Thank God the next morning at 6 a.m.
Wait, Uber parking lot? I thought that like it's all
they had like an office in Philly. Yeah, they had like a little Uber office in Philly.
The corporate office.
Yeah, so you know we slept there and I'm like first thing in the morning like I'm waking up and because like I'm trying to contact Uber on the support and
oh, tech support's always great with companies like that. Amazing. You can get to someone immediately.
Yeah, no, definitely not. So, you know, we sleep overnight in the van in this parking lot and there's like too many people to sleep in the van, but we made it work. My back is broken. And basically at 6 a.m., the girl finally calls me back and she's like, okay, you can meet me on my way to work. It's like 45 minutes in the opposite direction.
That's fucking shady, dude.
We go there and we get that done and that's all before 7 a.m., you know? And I'm like, all right, now we can get the rest of the day going. So it's like...
life on the road, bro.
That's like the kind of weird stuff that, you know, comes up where it's like just making sure that the artist can have what they need to have and the show can carry on. And we still made it on time to play the next rock show that day. So, you know, it's like the obstacles that are thrown at you, you have to kind of deal with. And that's it's a big part of being a TM.
Rolling with the punches.
I think that's a good place to leave off and take our break. And then when we come back in the second segment, we could go into like actual management and being in LA and all of that jazz.
It sounds good to me.
Reclaim. Oh, he's blowing kisses at fish.
Yeah.
That's so sweet. On that note. Yo, Philadelphia sucks. All right. Anyway, we're back with Joe right now. So when did you become a full-time motherfucking manager?
Honestly, that would have been like 2014. After my last band broke up, you know, I was like, okay, it's time to get back into management now. And, you know, I kind of had a bit of a fallout with my band's manager and, you know, I had stuff in the back of my mind, like Martin Broda being like, years ago, like before anything related
before his phone got stolen?
Before his phone got stolen. Years before he left his phone in a Uber in Philly, he was like, you know, I know you want to play in your own band, but like you're meant to be a manager. That was like the first person to really tell me that. I had people be like, you're going to be like good in the music industry. I guess just me as an artist wasn't that good, you know? So
according to some, it's a subjective medium, but maybe that was your like come to Jesus moment.
I think it was kind of a, you know, moment where, yeah, it's like this is but the thing is like I literally feel it though. It's like when I think of management, like I feel this shit, man. Like I live it, I feel it, and I love it. But basically where were we? So yeah, 2014.
Whoa, jinx.
Yeah, my last band had broken up at the end of 2013, and during that time I had started a little cassette record label that had some cool releases like For Never Shout Never, Dance Gavin Dance, Best Coast, and you know a few other bands as well. I got into management, and then I was working at a firm in Toronto. I didn't really like what they were about, so I left. I went on my own, and then I had built up quite a bit with an artist. I stopped working with that artist, and then during all of this, Abandon All Ships had broken up, and I was pressuring Martin, like, dude, you got to start something. Like, you got, like, what's the next thing? And he's like, dude, I'm done with music. And I'm like, that's not right. Like, just so you know, you can do what you want, just know that it's not right, you know? And then, so I had a lot of highs and lows in 2014, and then I guess 2 years after my band broke up in 2015, You know, Martin had came to me and been like, hey, I want to start a new band. There's no band name. There's no members. There's no songs. But I want you to manage it. And I said yes instantaneously. I knew that he had it. Yeah, I've always believed in Martin the way that, you know, he believed in me to be a manager. I said, I believe you can be, like, doing pop stuff, like, on a bigger level than what you're doing with the band and all ships. And that's kind of, like, what we're trying to really champion for each other, mm-hmm. you know?
And you live with him now, correct?
Yep. Yeah. We're roommates. We came out here together.
That's so nice.
Yeah, it's kind of like artist and manager.
Just, you came up together, too. Yeah. That's everything. So, yeah, you know, so there's that brotherhood.
Literally known him for, like, 11-plus years now.
So after all that, like, who else were you working with? Was it Bearings on your
breast? Basically, we had built up a band called Curses, which then became Cherry Pools over time. So that had gotten signed. Curses got signed, which then became Cherry Pools. But this would have been 2016. We had inked a deal with Weekday Sony. And then we were going to reformat Curses, and obviously now it's Cherry Pools. And then during that time, like, just a lot of stuff in the back where, you know, like, Martin's writing songs and recording an EP and, like, you know, like, stuff where managers don't usually have a whole lot to do. So I was like, well, maybe I can, like, start looking at some other bands during this time, you know? And everyone was telling me, like, dude, you got to check out this band Bearings. Like, two people, especially, that are very close to me, whose opinions I trust deeply, were like, you should manage this band Bearings. And, like, they're not even close friends. Like, they don't even talk, you know? So I was like, maybe I should look into this band. And I kind of felt, when I was looking into them, like, that there was, like, a whole lot of potential. But I didn't really, like, love what I had heard from what was on the surface. And then
Where were they from?
Ottawa, Ontario. So about four hours east of Toronto.
Is Ottawa the capital?
It is the capital.
Look somehow. At that. His eyes lit the fuck up. I know a little bit about Canadian history.
Why do you know so much about Canada?
Because of Bret Hitman Hart.
Oh, my God, dude. Bret the Hitman Hart is my guy.
I cried when Owen died. I cried.
I also cried when Owen Hart died.
Do you know who Owen or Bret are?
No.
Have you ever heard of a guy named Hulk Hogan?
The best there was, and the best there ever will be.
Is this wrestling?
Yeah, and it was my bar mitzvah theme as well. And he had purple sunglasses, and he signed an autograph. My best celebrity encounter is the Bret Hitman Hart. I was at the Orlando airport, and my mom's like, those guys at luggage claim look like wrestlers because they're huge. And sure enough, it was The Undertaker and
Bret Hart.
I was like 11 years old.
Cool.
Oh, it gets cooler. So I had a book, and it was a wrestling book, and Bret Hitman Hart autographed it, and it said, to Scott, stay cool, Bret Hitman Hart. And I'm telling you, like, I still get goosebumps. So if you're in a band, free advice, and people are paying money to see you, then you're at least a Z-list celebrity to someone. Just fucking be nice. Just be nice to people. They do not have to be in the room. It takes a second to say thank you. End rant. Bret Hitman Hart, the sharpshooter.
I really need to. Dude. My boyfriend loves wrestling so much, and he's going to listen to this, and I'm going to get such a passive-aggressive phone call, like, what do you mean you didn't know who they were? Have I taught you nothing?
Well, actually, I'm going to give a shout-out to Dakota for not teaching you well. Dakota, it's fucking Bret Hart, like, probably top 10 most famous wrestlers of all time.
He knows.
God damn it. Anyway, back to you. So, Ottawa and Bearings.
Yeah, so basically, I was on their Facebook page looking at the members list, and I'm like, who the fuck can I message? Like, who's the guy in the band that I can ask for new music from? And while I'm literally like, huh, like, who should I reach out to? Literally, Colin Haynes, the bass player, adds me on Facebook. Right there.
Mic drop. Fortuitous.
I'm like, okay, I got to get on a call with this guy. Because I'm like, I'm big about, like, fate and destiny and things lining up. And you can call me a hippie. I don't give a flying fuck. That's who I am. So, you know, I'm like, dude, I don't really do this often, but, like, let's get on a phone call. And he's like, yeah, dude, totally. So we got on a call, and I can tell he's really excited. And I was starting to get super excited. Energy was just massive. And I'm like, man, this is what I'm about. Because he was talking to some whack-ass management shit that was like, yeah, you know, for $1,000 a month,
oh,
you
retainer.
Can do this.
Yeah.
And, like, they have a bunch of, like, local bands on their roster. And it's like, so you're charging out the gate and you haven't proven success. Whack as fuck.
Well, so, and also all that guarantees is that the manager's going to get paid and they might not do anything for you.
Well, yeah, like the whole part about being a manager is that like you have to risk your time and your resources to go up with a band that's also risking their time and their resources and their fucking sanity.
You only make you know money what I mean? When like, they make money.
Yeah, and that's how it's got to be. It's like the artists are out there like, you know, fucking like suffering on tour, emotionally straining themselves. Like you got to be with the or with them side by side emotionally. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you're suffering, I'm feeling it too. If you're feeling great, I'm feeling great too. You know what I mean? So that's kind of my vibe. But well, basically,
you are speaking our credo. And Emily Burke, for the record, is 21. She just started managing.
Hell yeah! Congratulations.
Thank you.
I wish you the best of luck. When it gets hard, you just got to go harder. That's it. That's all.
Good advice. You fell hard.
Yeah. So you know, basically, I got on the call with him. I'm like, dude, don't get caught up in that bullshit. Like, send me your new songs. Let's see where this goes. He sends me the new songs. And I'm like, holy fuck, this is label ready. Like, it's ready to go. So then, during the time that Cherry Pools were getting ready to go in the background, I started developing bearings, and we put out North Hanson. Independently, and it created a big splash, and the band's goal was to sign to Pure Noise. Like, first thing they told me when we first met up, yeah, we want to sign to Pure Noise Records. And I'm like, cool, I know those guys, they're an awesome record label, and makes the most sense for Barings, you know, like the obvious home. So I was luckily able to turn the label onto the band, and they liked it as soon as I sent it, and we had some back and forth conversation, and one day it all kind of came to fruition, you know, and they got an offer from Pure Noise. And shortly after that, we got Brad Wiseman, who is my G, who books the band. And
State Champs as well.
Yeah, and we got a State Champs tour.
Look at that.
Yeah.
So like, you believe in everything happening for a reason. I said State Champs, and then you booked a tour. So 5 seconds of summer. Ooh, I'm being pointed at. This is
sorry.
Serious.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Your Canadian just came out. You said sorry. Yes. I was
sorry. Maple syrup.
No, but just so you know, I align with Canadian politics so much more than American. Continue.
Well, I mean, I assume a lot of people in Southern California do. But
it's a valid assumption. But I actually was just in the Central Coast, and I'm just telling you right now, it's beautiful, but the people aren't. Anyway, you're up.
Yeah, no, it's red up there for sure.
It's red.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, dude, for sure. So what was I going to say?
The State Champs thing?
Yeah, like 2 months before that, they were on another tour, and they did a digital tour bus interview, and the guy was like, so what is like your dream tour? The drummer goes, I would love to tour with State Champs. And literally 2 months later.
Yeah.
Good things happen in twos, you know?
Yeah, but you also like putting it out into the world. Isn't that like a thing?
Definitely. Yes, it's definitely
an energy. The secret and energy. Yes. I mean, as we could tell by everything Zen over here to my left.
Honestly, I don't even care.
It's awesome.
I fucking back the secret. Obviously, you got to work your ass off, but if you tell yourself that you're going to have something, like, and you work every day towards it, it will be yours. I promise you that. I literally yesterday pulled up, like, I was looking, I was making a merchandise visual board thing, and I was looking through, like, old documents to try to find something, and I found this, like, manifestation thing, and I read it in my apartment, and it said, I will live in California.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do you recall what year that was?
Probably about a couple years ago, honestly.
Look at you. And I believe you've been here less than a year.
5 months.
Not even a half a year.
Yeah.
Yep.
You're so new.
He's so vibrant and excited. Give him another day and he's going to be just another jaded LA native.
Honestly, I promise you, I lost my soul. Yeah. I'm just doing my best, you know?
I was born here, so I never had one.
No, you and my wife do not have any soul. So we don't have too much time left, so let's hear about the rest of the bands on your roster, because hopefully you'll set something off.
Wow.
Okay.
So I like to try to go in alphabetical order.
That's fair. Fair and balanced, like Fox News.
Yeah, you know? Wow. So Barings, Pure Noise Records, they just announced that they're putting out a record called Blue in the Dark on October 12th, and I am fucking excited.
And your
about
shirt
it.
Is blue in the light.
It is blue in the light. It's kind of a blue,
it's
I guess.
Purple.
It's blurple.
Blurple, definitely a blurple shirt. Obviously, after that.
God, thank you. Continue. Periwinkle over here.
Obviously, after that is Cherry Pools. You know, they are going to be putting out some more new music very, very soon. Another tour is going to be announced, and a lot of really exciting shit going on there. After that would be The Dangerous Summer, and they have been a favorite band of mine for about a decade, honestly. And
that's a big, I'm going to give you a fist bump for that.
Thank you.
I saw them in Philly.
Just going back to that whole, like, manifestation thing, that was something that literally, like, my little brother forced me to manifest, like, yo, you would be a great manager for them. And I'm like, Julian, they have management. I can't just do that. And he's like, no, I want you to manifest this. I'm like, okay, fine. And I did. And booking agent was like, yo, they're going to be needing some new management. So it was kind of like it all came together and it was fucking crazy.
And
so,
their self-titled record's fucking awesome.
And their self-titled Steph Mirsky
is on the cover of it. She is on the show.
Hell yeah. There you go. And they're working on some new music. I was in Nashville with them as they were demoing. And if you're a fan of the band like I am, all I can say is it's fucking incredible. Obviously, because it's The Dangerous Summer. And
they have a lot of incredible songs. They really do.
Absolutely.
I think that just really, really heartfelt and really solid vocals in a genre where it's often not.
Yeah.
He kills it.
AJ knows how to tap into his emotions and to speak.
And know, NASCAR.
And NASCAR as well. We just did that. That was fucking incredible. You know, but he is really good at like being in touch with his emotions and being able to speak what people aren't able to speak for themselves, I feel.
He reaches for the sun.
He definitely reaches for the sun, and, you know. Anyway, the puns are too real. I love it. There's two artists that I'm working with at the moment that are both kind of new, exciting, and preliminary. One is Riley. Definitely check out his new.
I saw him at Warped.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Check out his new EP, Love Was Never Enough. So excited about that. It's going to be a project that I know is going to pop the fuck off, and we have some cool things we're working on that I'm super stoked about. And then same thing can be said for Ryan Woods. Young kid, on the come up. Keep your eyes open. We got some shit that we're working on. And then last but not least, Set It Off.
Yay!
You know, absolutely love those guys.
Nice guys.
Rare. Very, very nice guys. Very, very nice guys. They've been a band for a while. They know
what
they want.
One of my wife's favorite bands, for the record. We don't always coalesce on music. It's one of probably in our top 10.
Well, anytime you need tickets, just let me know.
I know a guy.
Yeah, you might know a guy. But yeah, so basically, you know, that was also another situation where they had come off previous management. And you know, my partner and I, Maddie, were both really, really excited to work with them. And, you know, we kind of saw it as they were at a point where they were fresh without a team. They had just got off Equal Vision Records, management and booking agent. They had mutually parted. And basically, you know, we kind of saw
blank slate.
Yeah, you know, we saw a huge opportunity to kind of create new opportunity. And you know, we were talking to some record labels, and for me personally, I thought Fearless was definitely, you know, the proper home. And, you know, the guys were asking me, like, so what do you think about us signing to Fearless? And I straight up said they played in Toronto before I moved here, and I had the chance to, like, sit down with them at dinner. They're like, what do you think, Joe? And I'm like, honestly, if I was a big-time Set It Off fan, like a young kid that really liked you guys, and I knew a bit about the music industry and some record labels, I would be so happy to hear that you're on Fearless Records now.
It makes sense.
And it is the top comment on YouTube with like 3,000 likes. Somebody said, Set It Off on Fearless, like, that's like the most perfect thing, or like perfect home for them or something. And like, it's the top comment. It's got like 3,000 likes or something, probably more at this point.
Sweet.
And so, you know, it's like so exciting. I love the booking agent we're with as well. And, you know.
Who's that? Just
Jake Zimmerman,
mm-hmm.
New York boy.
New Yorker.
There you go.
Hey, and, how you doing?
Yeah, no, I'm super stoked about their new record that's going to be coming out. I can't say when, but I'm super stoked about it. And, you know, their new single just did a million hits on YouTube.
Pretty sweet.
Very, very quickly. So
it's been a great summer for them.
It's been an amazing summer for Set.
They killed it on Warped Tour.
Yeah. Well, I said that in the intro that at New York Warped, they were on at like 12:45, and they had one of the biggest crowds of the day. And usually the big crowds are in the middle of the day, so that was incredible for them. And a sweet set off story. I first saw them open for Story of the Year.
Incredible.
At the House of Blues in L.A. Incredible. Yeah.
And R.I.P.
I know. I just said sweet story, and then you brought it down with the R.I.P.
You're the brought I know. It down mentioning House of Blues, which is no longer on Sunset.
I'm a That's selfish why I said that. Asshole. So anything else alphabetically or set it off the end of it?
That's it.
Wow.
Six acts, yeah.
You did it pretty well, though. You elevator pitched them, too, so respect on that.
I've done it a couple times, you know?
Once or twice, but yeah. You've never had an interview like this.
No. No, I've never done it while someone's recording me and, you know.
See the green? Speaking of green, that's you.
Oh,
you're
wow.
The green. Green means go.
Nothing but a green line on a computer
green
screen.
Means go or green means Joe?
Green means go, Joe. Go, 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 Joseph. You know what they say. Hang on now, Joseph. You'll make it someday. Sha-la-la, Joseph. You're doing fine. You and your dream coat ahead of your time.
Damn, dude.
Do you know what that is?
No, but
you
I'll
should,
take it.
Musical theater girl.
Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, the worst show.
Oh, fuck off.
I
Andrew
hate that.
Andrew Lloyd Webber is the richest person in music. Paul McCartney is number two. Andrew Lloyd Webber's first musical was Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
I mean, that sounds exciting.
I can tell
I
by
want
the tone of your voice.
I Dreamcoat.
Well, you should acquire one eventually with Cherry Pool's royalties. You will acquire a Technicolor Dreamcoat made of cherry.
Or do I got to buy it from Martin since it would be more of his vibe?
I don't know. I have a feeling he would enjoy it based on their catalog. So we're going to close this out.
Cool.
What advice would you give for a young Emily Burke, who literally you gave her some managerial advice earlier, but what else would you give her? Because she literally just started co-managing a band called 18th and Addison with me.
There
and
you go.
What advice would you give her?
Honestly, it has to be fueled by passion. Like, if you're going after a dollar figure, if you're going after, oh, I want to be cool and I want to be, you know, whether you're a guy or a girl, like, yeah, like, this job is going to get me laid. It's going to make me more friends. It's like, get the fuck out. Like, that.
Oh, I've gotten laid way less since doing this.
I would have to agree. Yeah.
You also but, got married like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think
good
that has
things
something
coming
to do with
too,
it.
Yeah. Hey.
But yeah. Honestly, like, it needs to be fueled by actual love and passion for music, because there's going to be a lot of times on your journey where, and, you know, I'm still very much on my journey. I'm nowhere near where I want to be.
But you're an inspiration to the two of us, and you're an inspiration to probably a lot of people listening. Like, honestly, are you Irving Azoff? No, but maybe you will be.
I would absolutely love to be. But yeah, you know, it's like, honestly, it has to be fueled by passion, because if it's not, there's going to be so much shit along the way where, you know, it kind of weeds out people that aren't passionate. You know, it's like so many times where I'm like, okay, like, fuck, I want to quit, but like, I can't, because if I quit, what am I going to do? I'm going to be way depressed and I'm not going to love my life. And it's like, this is what gives me meaning and purpose and gets me out of bed in the morning. You know, I love what I do. I love music. I love the fact that I'm serving it. So it's like, always come from a pure place. And, you know, the right thing to do is always the right thing to do. Just keep that in mind. Never fuck over an artist or anyone at all. Keep your nose as clean as possible. And honestly, just do well by the people that are giving you their beautiful art to work with. You have to do right by them.
That's a really sick note to leave on. Emily, care to tell the people listening, the tens of gazillions listening, when you could tune into Waldman's Words again while I fist bump Joe again?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's on every single Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, and then again on Sundays at 8 a.m. Eastern, 5 a.m. Pacific.
You did the flippity flip.
Yeah, well, it's easier in my head.
Yes.
And then also you can listen on iTunes for free and the Adobe app and website.
And how can people get a hold of you?
I have a really pretentious Instagram handle at the Joe Buscema.
I've heard way worse. That's really not that
yeah,
bad.
You're fine.
I don't like it when girls call themselves princesses.
How often do you see that?
Oh, my God.
Princess Joe Buscema. I think that's
oh, my God. Excellent. That should be your new handle.
Yeah,
I love
yeah.
That,
so. Hit me up on Instagram.
Yeah, the gram.
But
slide into my DMs.
Honestly, though, I think if you go to my Instagram page, my email's there, reclaimmusicgroup.com. We love what we do. We manage artists that we fully believe in and that we want to take the next step with. So,
well, I'm going to take the next step and stop this interview. Have a good day.